You got to know where this guy at all times. There he is again.
How about three in a row?
Going to it. That was cold blooded.
Another three.
No!
All right, here we go. It's Saturday morning, August 20th. Sitting here with a rather large UFC card here, so I thought I'd hop on and do just a quick podcast. Now, it is the off season for basketball, right? Most content creators, people that cover the league are kind of taking a break off or taking a breath here this month. And frankly, I'm doing the same. I'm kind of pacing myself, but you can still expect new content from me weekly. And you know, I think the real break is in the evenings where there's no games to watch. And so this is the month where I tend to game the most. During the season, I don't have a ton of time to game watching all the basketball, right? And so I have found myself playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I was a big fan of the Assassin's Creed when it first came out on the 360, but I'd fallen off. I hadn't played one in a lot of versions of it, but I'm a fan of the Viking stuff, you know, with the show Vikings, The Last Kingdom. It's been a popular genre the last few years on all the streaming sites. I didn't like that Norseman. That Norseman movie was trash to me. I know some people thought it was like some sort of cinematic masterpiece. It wasn't for me, man. I guess it was Hamlet. Was it? I don't know. Anyway. So yeah, I'm playing this game and it's people really didn't review it well, but it was $20 and I'm like, all right, let me mess with it. I'm enjoying it all right because it's just slow pace. It's not very difficult. But the way the game works is there's a lot of dialogues in storyline parts. But really, most of the time when you deal with dialogue, there's like three options. And you kind of got to click through all three. You ask them this, and then, you know, you end the conversation. And so I'm playing the game and this other Viking chat comes up and I'm, you know what it was? It was like a carnival or some sort of game thing. And I'm thinking, all right, I'm going to get a new weapon here. I gotta answer these questions, go through this, and someone's going to give me a new weapon, a new sword or something like that. And so I'm kind of speeding through the dialogue and I click the first one and it goes into a storyline or a cutscene of this Viking, quote, showing me his plow sword. And so they go off into the cuts and my character Ivor gets plow sorted. And it took me about a week to recover from that. Again, I want to be the progressive guy here, but that was the first time my video game character that was different. But yeah, man, it's a fun game. It's long, but it's killing time, just allowing me to relax. Couple of NBA topics before I talk a little Niners and then my UFC picks here to cap off. You see Steph hosting a ton of his camps around the West Coast, I'm assuming, Under Armour brand and all that. He was even hooping down at Rico Hines. Did you see him hooping down there? That's the hot spot in LA for a lot of NBA players. And then you've seen LeBron playing at the Drew League. I guess he's going to go play this weekend up at the Crossover Pro-Am up in Seattle, Jamal Crawford. And it's just interesting to see these older established stars doing this now. This is, you didn't see that. This is usually for the young players, right? In the off season. And usually the 30 plus guys were in the lab by themselves, more of a controlled environment, or just resting. And so it's just, we'll see how long that trend continues until, knock on wood, one of these guys rolls an ankle or something. But what I really wanted to talk about was I loved seeing young Cannon Curry out there with Steph at one of his camps, and Steph was rebounding for him and he was taking jumpers, you know, trying to get it up at the hoop. He's still so young, right? But just cool to see Steph have those moments with having a son out there, right? His son, the girls, and I don't know, do Riley and them hoop? I'm not sure. I know, you know, most pro athletes, they take the stance of like, my kids can do what they want. I don't want to pressure them into, you know, following in my steps. But you assume Cannon's going to be a hooper, right? You know he's going to be a knockdown shooter, right? They named the boy Cannon. He's going to have a cannon. Maybe he'll be a football player, a quarterback. But what I was thinking was, like, what if Cannon's only like 5'10"? He could be the second coming of Steph Curry shooting the ball. If he's 5'10", that's going to be tough, man. Like, he probably won't be big enough. You know what I mean? And so, obviously, this is way down the road, but it just crossed my mind because you look at LeBron and Bronny, LeBron Jr., essentially, right? It looks like he's only going to be 6'3". You know, he's 17, 18 years old. He's probably not going to grow anymore. And Bronny, no doubt he's a D1 player. Is he going to be good enough to play in the league? I'm not saying make a roster. You know a team's going to put him on a roster. Is he good enough to make a rotation? I would like his chances a lot more if he was like 6'6", 6'7", like supposedly his younger brother Bryce is, right? But it's funny because he and Bryce, they don't really look alike. You know, they're built completely different, but younger Bryce is already taller than Bronny. And it was funny too, speaking of lookalikes and siblings and stuff like that, I was looking at, scrolling through Instagram, and I see Kyrie makes a post of his baby mama. I don't know if it's wife or what, but the mother of his child, you know, holding his child in these pictures and just shouting her out. I don't know what type of anniversary it was, but all I know is I was like, yo, whose kid is that? Whose kid is that? Because that certainly don't look like Kyrie's. Go look at Kyrie's Instagram and one of his latest posts and tell me that looks like his kid. I don't know. I'm just saying. But back to Bronny here for a second. You know, as I thought about it, because, you know, there was a time I was like, yo, is he going to even get offers, right? No, he's good enough to do that. You see the athleticism. Again, I think it's the size that's going to hold him back. But he's going to get an offer from every major program in the country, because the reality is having LeBron courtside at a handful of games is worth giving out the scholarship itself. Right. Just the exposure of who Bronny James is worth it for any of these programs to offer him. Right now, as it stands, apparently the favorite to land him is the Oregon Ducks. And you start to do the math. That's a Nike move, right? Oregon, Nike. It's all tied together. And then it also makes sense from a standpoint of he'll get to play. He'll get an opportunity to play on the Ducks, where, you know, he goes to Duke or Kentucky, he might be sitting behind two or three cats in that backcourt. So, I'm interested to see how this plays out. I watched a documentary talk about filling time here in the offseason on, is it Zaire Wade? Dwayne Wade's oldest son, and how he went to Sierra Canyon just like Bronny. And ended up just fizzling out. Remember, he was playing in the G League for Utah, but his path, it didn't work out, man. He should have went to college, and the path he chose didn't work for him. This KD thing, I'm sure y'all are tired of hearing the KD talk, because it's really the only big bit of news to talk about around the NBA the last few weeks. It really got me to thinking, like, yo, is Nike, KD, ESPN, are they in cahoots? Was this whole KD ask for a trade thing just to provide content for ESPN for the summer? It almost feels that way. They're like, all right, KD, we'll, you know, I don't know how you incentivize a man that's that rich, but, you know, you break him off or whatever, and you're like, hey, then this will just give us something to talk about. Nah, that'd be crazy, right? But the one thing that I wanted to point out was you've seen lately Durant hanging out with Harden and training with him. They're hanging out. They're going to Travis Scott concerts. They're in the gym together. And then it was reported like, yo, Durant is interested in going to the Sixers. And I was like, that's interesting, right? That's interesting, because when Harden was traded, the reports out of Brooklyn were that both he and Kyrie were just totally sick of Harden and his lack of professionalism, his inability to get in shape. They were taken back at how little professionalism he had and how much drive he had as a player, right? And it's like, okay, fine. So I don't know, maybe I'm reaching here, but if you read between the lines, is KD tired of Kyrie and kind of using Nash and Sean Marks as scapegoats? So you want to go reunite with Harden now after y'all were tired of him? I don't know, man. It's just so weird. But I've done so much psychoanalyzing of Durant over the years, because he does so much stuff that's just strange, right? But, you know, I think ultimately he is the classic single parent mama's boy. That's really what it boils down to. And again, I've talked about it before, but why I say this is because I coached so many kids like that, and working in group home. Just I've been around so many kids like that, where because it was just mama, the mom, out of guilt, compensates by babying her son too much and basically only telling them what they want to hear, I've dealt with it so many times. I've just seen it, right? And it makes for boys and eventually men who only want to be told yes. And I believe Durant has surrounded himself with these types of people. And that's what's led us here. Like, KD keeps people around him, Rich Kleiman, whoever it is, people that are just like, yeah, KD, yeah, that's it, that's it. And it stems from that. Anyway, before I jump off into some off-topic stuff here, two names I want to throw at you for final roster spots for the Warriors. I know, you know, camp, they've got the two. There's just different things here, but there could be a spot or two, right? One, how about a backup center who could be a really good model for James Wiseman? LaMarcus Aldridge. Like, he was kind of impressive in Brooklyn. I don't know what... Did he get hurt? I mean, he's pretty durable because he doesn't jump, right? He's just he's a floor-based guy. But that elbow, that face-up elbow game, and he's a big who is in the same vein as Wiseman as far as he wants to be a jump shooter. And so as a vet guy on the end of the bench and then could come in, still rebounds well and be a big body for just spot minutes here, he's not a point in his career where it would like eat Wiseman's minutes, right? He would understandably be behind young Wiseman, but as a mentor. Just a thought. And then the other guy, Jarrett Culver, former number six pick for, did Minnesota take him? I remember him at Texas. Was it Tech or Texas? I remember Scott and him being like, nah, that shot is never going to be there, bro. But he was a top lottery pick and he's bounced from Minnesota to Memphis. And now he's on the verge of being out of the league. And so I think he would be an interesting guy to try to, rehabilitate, you know, in the mold of a GP2. He's bigger than GP2. He's 6'6", but he's a really good athlete and he's a really good defender. He can't shoot. And so that would be an interesting swing as far as adding a big wing defender, just seeing what we've done with guys who didn't have a spot on any other team. So those are two names that I would be interested in. Not that I've heard anything about those two guys for the Warriors, but I thought I'd throw that out there in case someone's listening. It is football season, though. You know I'm a Niners fan, and I will probably cover a game or two here early in the season like I have in the past before the Warriors start up, right? And the Trey Lance era has officially begun. I've been digesting all the Niners content. That's really been my sports fix the last couple weeks. And by all accounts, the defense is set to dominate on some 2019 shit, right? The line is looking crazy. The kid from USC is a hit. Drake Jackson, beast, right? Kinlaw, healthy. We already know who Bosa is. The secondary is as deep as it's ever been in the Shanahan era. And then offensively, they've added a bunch of speed on the perimeter. And then they just keep drafting running backs, these big hammer running backs. A lot of pressure now on Trey Lance. You know, in hindsight, you say, well, should he have played last year? They went to the NFC Championship game. It's hard to, you know, I was a huge critic of how they handled the situation, but it's hard to shit on them. When you look at the results, Jimmy's going to be waived here probably within the next 10 days, right? That's the cutoff time. But look, here's the thing with Trey Lance, man. To me, it's the equivalent of drafting a lead guard, top three in the draft, who can't really shoot. I'm of the belief you are born a thrower. And Trey Lance certainly is not a natural thrower. That's one thing that just stands out. There's been a lot talked about his arm fatigue, the wobble on the ball. But he seems to have everything else. The toughness, the intangibles, the feel, the leadership, the understanding of scheme. And, you know, you look at this Shanahan scheme, this run-heavy scheme, that might be good enough. It's not like they're going to ask him to be Drew Brees, right? Can he hit enough big plays over the top to keep the defense honest, to open up the field with, because you know there's going to be some trick plays. The play action is so heavy, him rolling out on the move where he seems to throw the ball better on the move. And it seems also like throwing the deep ball is probably his best throw. The reports I've heard is he struggles in the flats and the short stuff. Throwing across the middle is going to be precarious. He misses high a lot, right? Because he's just not a natural thrower. But when he can uncork and he's making a deep throw, that seems to be his bag right now. And they add Danny Gray. There's a couple guys. I forget the other kid's name, but they added some speed to the outside. You've got Ayuk coming into his prime here. So there's a lot of weapons, man, right? But I think What do you have, one series in that Green Bay preseason game? But the most exciting thing that I've seen from him is his pocket presence, because you hear about how little experience he has. He's played like 20 games in 2.5 years, right? The COVID season, this, that. Like, he hasn't played at all, but he just has. You can't see pressure. You got to feel pressure. That's what the gurus will tell you. Once you see it, it's too late. You have to feel it. Plus, you don't have eyes in the back of your head. He seems to feel pressure, and he has a natural wiggle to kind of avoid direct hits, which at his size is very unique. But it was the slide when he scrambled and quarterback slid in that game. And a lot of people were talking about it, right? Because afterwards, when he was asked about it, he said that was the first time he's ever slid in a football game. He said, but people were telling him that players, you know, at practice and training, they were like, hey, you got to get down. You got to slide. And so he slid. I just think that represents not just the fact that he is going to be able to have some self-preservation. We know that that's an issue in football, right? Some guys are just kamikazes, even quarterback. But it was just the mindset and willingness to adapt that you don't typically see in a scrambling athletic quarterback. Most of the time, that archetype, they kind of just play one way. They are who they are. They're a scrambler, a runner. They're going to do it. Like, they're not going to adapt. And he's showing the ability to adapt, right? If he's going to be highly adaptable and then, by all accounts, again, have elite practice habits and understanding of the game, a strong, strong mind, that's the most exciting. That's the most exciting thing about Lance. But it's going to be interesting to watch him develop and take his lumps with a Super Bowl roster around him in a loaded NFC. And so, again, I'll cover a few games of the Niners here before the Warriors get back underway and maybe just do some check-ins along the way like I had in the past. The whole point of this really was to give out my UFC picks for tonight, 278. Haven't talked UFC in a while. And frankly, there haven't been enough big fights to talk. This is a pretty decent card here, headlined by Usman Edwards. Kamaru Usman, the Black GSP. I think the consensus is he's going to play it smart, right? He's going to close the distance and he's going to turn it into a wrestling match. Usman, despite him trying to sell fights, kind of change his image, all the cringy shit he does up into the fights, he hasn't taken it into the cage, right? We know he's disciplined. He's going to remain disciplined. And so otherwise, I'd wear you right. You see the outfits and the trash. He doesn't have that natural charisma that he's grasping for so much. And I don't blame him for grasping for it because, they're prize fighters, right? That's the name of the game. It's just not natural to him. But again, when he steps in the cage, he knows who he is. He remains disciplined, and that's why he's remained on top for so long. My guy was asking me about his knees, and it's been reported now for several years. He came out, I think he was on Joe Rogan's podcast. He said, look, man, I have to walk downstairs backwards. My knees are so bad. I haven't done cardio in 3 years. My knees are so bad. What's the saying? I was born at night, but I wasn't born yesterday. Did I butcher that? Look, Kamar is no dummy. Why would he announce to the world he has bad knees as a fighter? If you watch the sport closely, a lot of the times, if a guy has a bad knee, he'll wear 2 knee braces just to hide which knee it is. After the fight, someone will say, usually if it's an excuse, if they lose, they're like, oh, I had a meniscus or whatever, right? But you just don't do that as the champion, right? It just makes no sense to announce that. So look, I'm not saying he doesn't get bad tendonitis or he has to take extra care of his knees, but I think it's bait. I think it's to bait opponents to throw leg kicks, right? We know he is the most dominant wrestler in the division. Outside of Khabib, the most dominant wrestler in the sport, right? So no one wants to really throw kicks against him. His striking, it's gotten better, right? He has power, but it's not polished. He's even admitted that Edwards' striking is better than his, right? It's just smoother. And so as a wrestler, how do you bait guys into throwing, oh, I got bad knees. My knees are killing me. Hey, you know, attack my legs. I think that it's much more strategy than truth, but that's how I see it. As for Leon Edwards, this is a rematch from 7 years ago. And if you don't know the storyline with him, he's just had a ton of bad luck. Elite fighter who's really has supposed to have had this opportunity years ago. COVID, injuries, fight pullouts. It's just been one thing after another. It almost feels like he's cursed. British striker by way of Jamaica. Look, I believe him. I believe he thinks he's better. There's no doubt, right? Because sometimes you hear guys talk challengers, especially against a dominant champ. You're like, man, you don't think you're going to win, bro. Just shut up, right? No, Leon thinks he's going to win. And you look at his style, smooth rhythm striker, right? He knows how to pace his strikes where it's a tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, boom, right? He knows when to throw a big one, when to put some on, when to put something off of it. In turn, that's why his striking looks so smooth. And, you know, I like his stoic nature. My question is he going to go for the kill? I saw BC Brian Campbell allude to kind of how conservative he fights on Morning Combat. And he's right. You know, you look at his fights, like, first you look at Usman and his neck, his head, pause. Has he been dropped by punches ever? Did Kobe drop him briefly? I can't really remember him ever being dropped, right? He has a crazy chin, right? That's why I'm talking about the size of his skull and his neck and stuff. That stuff comes into account. So I don't think he's going to be able to drop Usman with just some precision shot. He's going to have to hurt him and then pounce on him, right? And I'm just not so sure Edwards has a good sense for going for the kill. The greatest example of that, if you want to reach back into UFC history, is the axe murderer Wanderlei Silva, where the killer instinct, Rampage had it. I'm going back a ways here for some of these guys. Connor has it. Connor has it if you want to do something more recent. But, you know, sensing, oh, okay, a fighter's hurt. I've hurt a guy. Now let me empty the clip and finish him off. And Edwards, for as smooth as he is, he fights like he knows he has a limited gas tank. Now, to be fair, we haven't seen him run out of gas. He has a couple 5-round fights, right? Like, he doesn't run out of gas, but is that because he has a big tank? Or he plays everything kind of conservative, right? He never gets out of pocket. Pap, 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 precision. Pap, pap, pap. You know, he's just conservative. And I think that he's going to have to be willing to empty the tank to finish Usman. It's not going to just be one shot. He's going to have to damage him and then sense the kill and go for the moment. To outpoint him, that's going to be tough, man, because he's going to lose the wrestling. And that's the other aspect of it. Is he going to get Russell fucked? And I thought it was interesting because in the lead up to the fight, they told the story after he lost the first time, he moved stateside to AKA in San Jose, DC, Khabib, right? The most elite grappling camp in the sport. But then he wasn't willing to pay his dues. He said, you know, they weren't giving him the attention he needed and they were prepping other guys. Well, that's, you're moving to this elite camp with Khabib, with these other champions. You were going to have to play second or third fiddle for a while. You were going to have to earn your keep there until you became the guy. And it didn't sound like he was willing to do that. And so he went back overseas. Had he stayed at AKA for years, I would like his chances a lot more tonight. Because, you know, there's certain regions and areas of the world is where you go to certain places for kickboxing, like striking. We all know the UK is strikers, right? So yeah, I'm sure they brought in great wrestler guys around here and there, and they've worked on his grappling. It's not the same as being at AKA for a couple years, where every day it's iron sharpening iron, and you're getting the nuances and the little tricks and details of how the elite grapplers are doing it. So I think that ultimately you're going to see Usman retain his title, probably a late stoppage, TKO on the ground, something like that. Co-main event, Luke Rockhold versus Paulo Costa. Heel versus heel, as Chael Sonnen put it. I don't necessarily like Luke Rockhold, but I respect that he owns who he is. He's a dick and he knows it, right? He's not hiding, right? And you know, it's funny, he kind of reminds me of Frank Mir. Frank Mir is much more likable, don't get me wrong, but in the sense of he just says too much leading into the fight, if you ask me. Rockhold just runs his mouth too much and he kind of shows his hand in being, you know, owning it and being too, because I'm guilty of this at times, but I've learned as I've gotten older, pride yourself on being real and transparent, right? He's a little too transparent at times, I think, and he says too much. I think that he probably talks himself in and out of winning psychologically a lot. If you just, I see cracks in his confidence because he said so much. And he said something interesting to DC, his AKA teammate. He said, you know, moving back down to 185, where I'm lighter and I can move better, now I can fight on my terms. That's just it, right? That's the problem. Paulo Costa's not going to let him do that. Luke is elite if you stand there and make it a skill for skill thing, footwork, space, right? And you let him dance his dance. Yeah, that's when he was champ. That's when he looks real nice, right? But I think we know who Costa is. He's going to bum rush him, and he's going to make it a brawl. And so maybe if Luke can survive getting knocked down and pull guard or somehow get this thing to the ground, he could pull something off slick. But look, I'm like the consensus here with this one. I think that he's going to get clipped early. And there's a part of it, an ego thing to him, a pissing contest element to what we've seen with Luke. As smart as he may sound pre-fight, he gets in there and his ego takes over. And you're going up against a younger guy who... that's his style, brawls, head down brawls. The fight's not going to be pretty enough for Rockhold to win. And then the third fight here, Jose Aldo versus Merab. I'm not even going to try and say his last name. He's one of these little Russian, just tough dudes you love to watch fight because you know he's going to bring it every time. And I actually think this is similar to the Rockhold fight in the sense where Aldo, just like Luke, you know, if you let it be a striking match, he can beat anybody where it's just like you go, I go type of thing. Like I said, right. And you just stand there and do that. Aldo is as good as it gets. Right. But Merab ain't playing that game. We know that. Right. And then the other aspect of it is you look at Aldo this week on the embeds and all these, you know, the stuff that they put out there. And I know how much he's said that he is good with this weight class and it's easy for him and all that. He looks near death. Cutting to 35. It was a problem cutting to 45. He's a very old and fighting age, right? He's been fighting for like 20 years and just depleting himself like that. To be fair to the legend that Aldo is, he has shown the ability to survive brawls. No one's questioning his toughness, right? But at this stage in his career and at this weight class, I think he gets mauled. All right, so wrap this one up. Be back with perhaps another classic breakdown next week. I got to think if I want to do that next week. I have one planned. I'm just not sure if it's going to be next week, but I'll have something dropping. Y'all enjoy the weekend. I'm out. Ciao.